This episode contains graphic details of murder and other crimes. Listener discretion is advised. And welcome back to Not Always Polite. I hope you guys had a great week last week. As you can probably tell, I'm still sick. We're doing better, but not 100% there yet. So, again, I apologize for my crusty voice, but it is what it is. We're gonna do it anyways. Today, I have an unsolved disappearance of a child. This is the case of Lonnie Philip Bordeaux, and I'll just get right into it. Lonnie Philip Bordeaux was born on September 15, 1970, to his parents Elmer and Linda in Ottawa, Ontario. He was said to be very bright and high-spirited. He had an IQ of 116 at the age of 6. I'll be honest, I don't really know a lot about IQs, but the fact that they said it probably means that it's important. And by they, I mean the True Crime Diva blog that I read this from. And read it. Anyways. So Lonnie's parents ended up divorcing in 1975, and his dad got primary custody of 5-year-old Lonnie and his sister, Lori. Their mother, Linda, had weekend visitation. 2 years later, Elmer met a woman with 3 children of her own from a previous relationship, and she soon moved in with Elmer and the 2 kids. Lonnie didn't get along with her at all, and his behavior started to take a turn. His father was able to find a couple named Mel and Pam Spallin through the Children's Aid Society to watch him while he worked during the day. I'm not sure what caused the mother to not get full custody or why Elmer didn't want her to have custody of him instead while he was working, but anyways. About halfway through 1977, the Spallins had temporary full-time custody of Lonnie. The family court eventually decided that Lonnie and Lori needed to be reunited with their mother. During a Christmas visitation that same year, Linda had noted that Lonnie seemed hyperactive. She immediately asked for and was granted custody of both children. Elmer objected to this arrangement, stating that the girlfriend with whom Lonnie did not get along with had moved out of the house and broken up with him. At this time, Children's Aid Society threatened him with legal action if he tried to interfere with the mother taking over custody. Lonnie was still unhappy under the care of his mother, telling her that he really wished that she and his father would get back together, but she told him that that would never happen. I feel like this is something that a lot of children of divorce can resonate with, so I do feel for Lonnie. CIS decided to assign counselor Dave Plummer to help deal with Lonnie's issues. Although it took a few months, Lonnie began to open up to Dave and his behavior improved. However, a few months later, he started to get jealous when his sister would go with him to visit his father. Not just his father, their father, sorry. Elmer then had separate visitations with each child, thinking that would make things better, but it ended up leading to Lonnie being upset that Lori was having alone time with their father. Elmer said he wanted to spend more time with Lonnie due to his tantrums, but it never seemed to be enough. In 1980, Lonnie was placed into a group home for kids his age for 6 months, after which he went back to live with his mother. He seemed to be better adjusted and his behavior improved, but again, it was short-lived. He began attending grade 4 at Assumption Separate School. The curriculum there was half French, half English, which was a struggle for him, and he had a hard time making friends. This caused his behavioral issues to resurface. In late January of 1981, Lonnie argued with his father about how much time they spent together. Elmer said he would no longer spend any time with him if he didn't get his attitude in check. A few days later, Lonnie tied a rope around his waist and lowered himself out the bedroom window. He was found by Van Ayre police 4 hours later at a movie theater about 2 miles from their home. Elmer spoke to Lonnie immediately after the police picked him up, and his son never gave any indication that he would do such a thing again. But that being said, he also didn't give any indication that he wouldn't do that again. So, At this time, Lonnie is 10 years old. Keep that in mind. The following day at 6:30 p.m. on February 5th, 1981, Lonnie asked his mother if he could watch TV in the basement. 15 minutes later, he was gone and never seen again. Linda apparently told the police shortly before the disappearance that Lonnie watched a film called, quote, The Prince of Central Park, about a pair of siblings who run away from home and live in a tree in New York's Central Park. Lonnie said, quote, that looks neat. As one can imagine, given Lonnie's runaway attempt literally the day before, the immediate assumption by both authorities and his parents was that he had run away again. The theory that police and Lonnie's mother believe is that Lonnie crawled out through the basement window and ran away again. However, it did not appear that he took any belongings with him. Linda thought that maybe Lonnie had hitchhiked to his father's home in Carlton Place, about 50 kilometers away. Authorities were positive that Lonnie was staying with friends in town, but refused to say how they knew that. His friends said he was probably sleeping under apartment stairwells, but the police searched several apartment complexes and found nothing. Officers believed Lonnie would safely return within 24 hours. Remember, this kid's like 10. Maybe 11. No, he's 10 at this time. So he's 10 years old. Police claimed that Lonnie was, quote, streetwise, and had been spotted panhandling for food on Rideau Street a few days after his disappearance. Authorities said the boy knew how to panhandle and shoplift. However, Plummer contradicted the police and said Lonnie didn't know how to do either. He did have a high IQ, so he might know how to do that, but it's not like he had experience doing those things, if you know what I mean. So there were several alleged sightings of Lonnie, including one at St. Lawrence Shopping Center, but police could not confirm any of them. Lonnie was a typical-looking boy with blonde hair. Whoever the witnesses had seen could have been any blonde male around the same age. Linda Bordeaux released a letter asking for her son to return home and included a message to friends, quote, if you're his friend, please be a good friend and help Lonnie face his problems and not run away from them. But Lonnie's friends were loyal to him and said that they would not report it to police if they did see him because they knew Lonnie didn't want to go home, which is very interesting. Police checked several leads, but they could not find Lonnie, and apparently he kept eluding them, staying one step ahead of them. If that was the case, authorities publicly acknowledged that the 10-year-old boy had outsmarted them. 2 weeks after Lonnie vanished, police ended the search and claimed all of the media attention surrounded Lonnie and kept the boy from returning home. About 3 months after Lonnie's disappearance, police made contact with a girl Lonnie's age. She was able to get word to Lonnie that she wanted to meet him. The girl and an officer converged by the water fountain in the St. Lawrence Shopping Center. At the meetup, she pointed to a boy walking towards them and said, there he is, that's him coming now. But the boy heard a security guard's walkie-talkie and fled. The police never confirmed if the boy was Lonnie Bordeaux. Both Vanier police and Lonnie's parents maintained that Lonnie had ran away and was alive and safe somewhere. Investigators didn't suspect foul play for even a second. For that reason, they never searched Lonnie's parents' homes or suspected them of any wrongdoing, even though Lonnie and his parents had problems. Linda claimed that she received several mysterious phone calls after her son's disappearance. During the first call, a young male voice asked for Lori, but she wasn't home at the time. Only after Linda hung up the phone did she realize the caller was her son, which sounds pretty sus to me, but anyways, she received subsequent phone calls, but nobody spoke, only silence on the other end. She and the police believed that the caller was Lonnie, but the police never identified the person. Lonnie's mother and father never wavered from their runaway theory. They didn't even mention the possibility that their son had met with foul play. It is unclear where his parents are today, but by 1986, his mother had moved out of the Vanier home. His father had moved to Ottawa by 1991, and Lonnie's sister Lori had a son in 1985. She would now be in her mid-50s. To this day, Lonnie has never been found. He was last seen wearing a blue and red lumberjack shirt or jacket, I'm assuming that means plaid, a blue V-neck velour sweater with white stripes on the collar, blue corduroy pants, and snowmobile boots. And that is all the information I have on Lonnie's case, but the whole thing is so weird to me. Like, obviously something was going on in that home, And if Lonnie did run away, I feel like the parents know more than they are leading on. Obviously, I have no proof of that, but it just, the whole thing is so suspicious to me. So honestly, I hope that Lonnie simply ran away and started a new life, but I feel like that would be really difficult for a 10-year-old boy, unless one of his friends helped him, and maybe like one of his friends' families knew like what was going on at home and they let him stay with them. But I have no idea. But anyways, that is today's case. I hope you guys enjoyed. Please follow me on Instagram at NotAlwaysPolite. And if you would be so kind to leave me a review wherever you're listening, I would really appreciate it. Hopefully next week I am feeling much better and I don't sound like a nasally rat. But we shall see. Anyways, I hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend and I will catch you guys next week. Bye.